Hi, everyone. Before we start the episode, I have an important announcement for our listeners in the UK. Geo Business is back. This year, the conference is happening on the 3rd and 4th of June at XL London. Free registration is now open. Here's why you should be there. Whether you work in urban planning, environmental management, construction, or any field where location data matters, GeoBusiness is something for you. You'll discover real-world cases of geospatial technology, get hands-on with the latest innovations, and hear from leading industry experts solving actual business challenges. Experience live demos, insightful seminars, and network with thousands of professionals using location intelligence in exciting ways. If you want to stay ahead in this rapidly evolving space, this is where it happens. Join me at Geo Business on June 3rd and 4th. It's where the geo community comes together. Register today and I'll see you there. Now on to the episode. Welcome to the Geo Mob Podcast, where we discuss geo innovation in any and all forms, whether for fun or profit. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the GeoMob Podcast. Today, we have with us the winner of the Best Speaker Prize from the most recent GeoMob Berlin back in February. My guest is Benjamin Trigona-Harani, who gave a fantastic talk about old Ottoman maps and using them to create a routing engine of the Ottoman Empire. So, this was a very fun one. It was absolutely overwhelming pick to win the Best Speaker Prize. So I think we're in for a very interesting discussion. Benjamin, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Ed. Yeah, I'm really pleased to be here. I'm glad you enjoyed the talk and I'm looking forward to discussing it more.
Tell us a bit about yourself. What is your background in geospatial? Because I should set some context here because I had met you before you gave this talk, but just very briefly. And after the talk, my assumption was that you were some sort of academic, that this was your like academic project. And it turned out it is not. It is not actually. I mean, this is kind of just your hobby project. So this was absolutely amazing, the sheer scale of it. So tell us what got you into geospatial. What do you do? What's your day job? And then let's dive into some Ottoman routing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I came to geospatial, not through my academic background. I came to it was close to 15 years ago. I joined a really small company that was a really fantastic place to work. It was called OpenGeo. And it kind of brought together the world's, I would say the world's leading open source geospatial developers into one little company that was putting together this, software stack. So we had a database, we had a server, we had a front end, and that's how I was introduced to it. I lucked out in getting hired by that company and getting to work with, again, like some of the most amazing people that you could hope to work for. And so I spent a few years there, and then I gravitated towards the Earth observation space. So I spent 10 years working at Planet, which is an Earth observation company, and then most recently I'm at another Earth observation company, ICEYE. So I'm based here in Berlin. My company is headquartered in Finland, that's my day job. I work with our customers who are using the products that are derived from the satellites up in space. And as you pointed out, that doesn't really have anything to do with the project itself. But I do have a connection to the history space. So although my undergraduate degree was in computer science, and that's how I ended up in a software company doing the geospatial software. I did do a master's degree in Ottoman history. So, and it had nothing to do with maps, didn't have anything to do with any of the subjects that we're going to be talking about today, but that's how I got into it. That's how I got introduced to a lot of the sources, which will come in handy when you do pursue something like this afterwards. I did my master's degree in Turkey, in fact, at Bosphorus University there, which has its own interesting backstory, which dates to the period which we'll be talking about when it comes to the particular project here. And after I finished my degree, I ended up moving back home to Canada, and that's when I sort of returned to my roots in computer science and started working in the software industry. So I came about this in kind of a roundabout way. But ultimately, it is combining sort of like two pillars upon, you know, my academic background and then my professional life and for the past 15 years or so.
Well, very nice. So did you learn Turkish then when you were there? Do you
speak Turkish? I did. Yeah, I had to learn. I learned Turkish, although the education was in English. I mentioned that this university has a long history. So it started as an American mission school way back in the 1860s. And eventually, after the Turkish Republic was founded, it was nationalized and turned into just like a regular state university. But it still has that heritage of teaching in English. But because I was studying Turkish history, of course, I had to learn the Turkish language, including the, you know, like the old version of Turkish that was used in the Ottoman Empire. And again, so when you look at some of the maps that were part of the project in question here, you know, they would be using that old Turkish language, which is written in the Arabic alphabet. And
I see. So it's not Latinized. Kind of, it's in Arabic script.
Yeah, wow. Absolutely. The Latin alphabet was introduced later on. The current, you know, Turkish populace is kind of divorced from this history, in fact, because both the alphabet and the language has changed so much over the past 100 years.
Wow. Okay. So describe this project, because everything you've said so far, I mean, this is like so insane, the level of complexity and difficulty, I must imagine, for an English speaker to be working in Arabic script to get these maps to then take us through what exactly is this project and as a first question, why are you doing this?
I mean, look, maybe I should start it. Like, I'll start at the beginning. Like, the story goes actually way back to when I was a student. So I mentioned I didn't study anything to do with mapping. But I was kind of like, I kind of remember what happened. I was in the university library and I was just looking at some books there. And I found, a copy of what were called, Salname. And it basically just literally translates as yearbook. And what happened was in about the 1860s, there was just like a reorganization inside the Ottoman Empire. And each of the new provinces that they created, they had this task of producing a yearbook. So it was like an annual collection of data about the province. So, you know, there'd be like economic data about, you know, who worked in the administration, demographics, lists of schools, how many people graduated, just like all kinds of data. They weren't necessarily consistent from province to province. Anyway, I was flipping through this and towards the end, I noticed in this particular province's yearbook that they had the table, and it was like, okay, if you're in the provincial capital, it would take this long to travel to this town, this long to travel to this other town. And eventually it had this kind of like, you could sort of map out, you know, not literally a map, but, you know, through this table, you could figure out how long it would take to travel between all these different locations in the province. And I guess this was useful to somebody, you know, maybe if you're an administrator in a town, you'd want to know how long it would take you to travel to the capital.
Just to be clear, this is traveling by foot or by horse or something at this time.
Yeah. Traveling by road. Yeah. So there's nothing to do with what we'll get to in a little bit later. And, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. My idea at the time was like, well, if you just got all these different books from all the different provinces and you kind of like meshed them together, you could tell how long it would take to travel between any two points. And, it was a nice thought experiment, but it never went any further than that. And, you know, I went on and I graduated. And as I mentioned earlier, I ended up just going back to working in computers. And at some point, I came across this website, and it's still online, although it's not active anymore. And it was just a blog that somebody was doing as a hobby, and it was called Mid-Afternoon Map. And he would just post interesting maps, usually having to do with Turkey or the Ottoman Empire or the Middle East. And they were usually like, you know, fun topics like, you know, a cheese map of Turkey, because if you've been to Turkey, you know that every city has its own, you know, specialty cheese. And all kinds of, serious, less serious topics. And I thought it was fun. And I ended up sending him a couple of maps that, I had come across during my studies that I thought would be interesting. And, you know, they ended up on the blog there. And at one point he sent me a map, and it was one of the maps that I showed in my talk, which was you know, it showed it was a map of the Ottoman Empire, and then had all the towns and cities, and it had the connections between them, and saying like, this is how long it would take to travel between them.
It now, was kind of more of like a network map kind of than a, exactly. than a geographic map. I mean, it exactly. was geographically arranged, but
exactly. Yeah. And the intention was just like those books, which was tell people how long it would take to travel, not, you know, not the, the path of the road, you know, geographic, as you said, but really practically speaking about travel. And I thought, hey, that's funny. You know, I kind of thought about this years ago, and I was working for a company that, that now had all the technology to do exactly, you know, what I thought about. And so I went ahead and I just took part of the map. I actually didn't do the entire thing. And I just threw it into a database, digitized it. And then ran a simple routing algorithm on top of it, which again was available in the software that we had. And, you know, from that, I could actually answer the question, you know, between any two points, how long would it take? You know, what path would you take? And you know, I did that and, you know, I threw it up online and it was kind of fun. I showed this guy that that had sent me the map and that was kind of it. And it, that data sat there for several years without getting touched. I mean, the website wasn't even online at that point. And it wasn't until, you know, a few years ago when I just kind of remembered it and I hauled out the data because I still had it. And I revisited, I sort of updated the technology behind it. But then, you know, the thinking changed slightly, which was, well, what about all these other methods of travel that also existed, right? So we had, you know, ferries, we had railroads, we had the introduction of tramways. And, you know, you start to dig into this and you realize that there was this overall transformation in people's lives at the time, really driven by technology. And, you know, this is obviously not unique to the Ottoman Empire. This was a global thing that would be happening anywhere. But really, you start to think about what was the temporal aspect to this, in the sense that, you know, traveling in 1860 was going to be a very different thing from traveling in, say, 1900, because the development of the railroad network was expanding so quickly, or, you know, the introduction of other technologies was basically changing the way that people experience travel. And that was something which, you know, travel in the Eastern Mediterranean world probably hadn't changed very much for, you know, probably since back to the Roman times, right? Yeah. I mean, they were using largely the same roads still existed. I mean, not maybe physically the same roads, but the same routes were still being used. Okay, sure, there was probably developments in, you know, sailing technology, which meant you could move a little bit faster, but it wasn't materially different until, you know, 1850s, 1860s, when you start to get steamships and then ultimately railroads. And that was the concept there. It's like, well, instead of just doing a point in time routing engine, like, can we start to layer in the, say, the railroad network as it developed and start to do the comparison between what it was like to travel in 1 year versus another year and see those differences? And you know, one of the earlier iterations of the application, you know, wasn't just picking point A and point B, it was picking point A, point B, and then the date. And you could, you know, grab a little slider and
wait. Ben, can I ask you a question? You're doing all this by yourself, or there's like a you're exchanging with academics who are interested in this, or like what? Like, I'm imagining you like at night poring over maps of the Ottoman Empire alone, like, is there a historic routing engine scene that I'm unaware of, or?
I mean, if they're out there, like, I'd love to hear about it, because I haven't really come across them. But I mean, you know, fundamentally, as I mentioned, you know, 10 years or so ago, I had done the digitization of the data. So really, like, at that point, the only thing you need to do on top of that is add a date. You know, if you think about a network, which is just, you know, it's just literally some points and then the connections between them. To give that temporal aspect to it, you just say, like, well, when was this railroad built? And then you put a date on it. So, you know, 1870. And then this other railway line, maybe, you know, 1880. And, you know, that's what transforms a simple network of paths between cities into one which has this, like, augmented temporal aspect to it. And then, you know, if I say, hey, what did my network look like in 1880? It's a little bit different than what the network looked like in 1870 or 1890 because of the developments that have happened between those two different years. So the model, I mean, I'm simplifying it a little bit, but frankly, like it's a fairly simplistic concept that's going into it, which adds that temporal element to it.
Which software were you using to do all this, or some kind of just your own homemade kind of scripts, or is it some kind of routing software?
So as I mentioned before, I stored everything in a database. So PostGIS is the database, which is a fairly widely used geospatial database. And PostGIS has an extension called PG Routing, which is, implements a routing algorithm that you can use for data in PostGIS. So again, the concept is very simple. It's just, you've got your vertices, you've got your lines that connect them. The routing engine knows how to operate on it. Literally, the only difference from, say, what was most people would do is that when I say, like, give me the route between these two cities, I'd always say, here's the year. And the year is lets you, query the database slightly differently in each instance and produces a different network that the routing engine will use to determine the fastest route.
Can I ask a question, Ben? So I get the technical joy of creating this thing and getting it all together, but then at the end, how many queries are you actually doing? Like, are you sitting there being like, let me see how we get from, the coast of modern Albania all the way down to modern Syria or whatever. Like what's the use case here?
I think you said it before. It's just, it's a hobby. And I think it's the kind of thing where you kind of get sucked into it. To give an example, when I found out that there was an electric tramway network in Beirut, I was like, I had no idea there was an electric tramway network in Beirut. I've been to Beirut. There's certainly no tramways there anymore. There's no railroad system anymore. And I used to have a fairly sophisticated one that, you could use to go to a number of different places. So then you kind of get said, I'd love to know more about this. And, so you look through maps and documents and you're just like trying to find more information. So intellectually, it's kind of stimulating just to find out what that world was like at that particular time. And then if you find something, you dump it in the database and you don't really have to do much work beyond that.
And this is fully, I know you've documented the project quite comprehensively on your blog, but is the actual routing engine exposed to the world on the blog or?
Absolutely. Anybody can go to the application and play around with it themselves. I mean, it's in, I've got an older version, which again is based really on the data from years and years ago. And then more recently, as I've been looking at some of the local transport networks, I kind of threw that into a slightly different one, which is provides an interface that's more suitable for those kinds of transportation. But yeah, it's all online and anybody can play with it.
And so what kind of feedback do you get? Who's using this? How are people finding it? And are like, or do you get like super pedantic things where people are like, that line didn't open in 1863. It was only in September of 1863, and you need to, corrections.
First of all, I would love nothing more for people to, check that that the data is actually correct. I think that would be amazing. If I had, people looking over it and finding the places where maybe I got something wrong. I think the feedback. It's such a relatable thing in some ways, because a day doesn't go by when I probably don't pull out my phone and I'm trying to figure out on a map how to get from A to B fastest. To say to somebody like, hey, this is what it would have been like 100 years ago, if you had a cell phone to find the fastest route between, it's like, people can, like I said, they can relate to that that sort of functionality very quickly. And a lot of people, myself included, had no idea that there was so many options when it came to traveling around, right? Like the sophistication of the ferry networks, or the sophistication of the city-to-city steamship networks, or the railways and stuff. you know, it's fun to experience that, especially if you live in those lands and you live in the places where none of this exists anymore, or, you know, you don't have the capability to travel between two cities because there are two different countries now. And, you know, there's no way to cross those borders like there used to be 150 years ago. So, I think like that's why it's sort of relatable and interesting to people, because it talks about a time when things were very different, both in terms of like how you traveled, but also what you could do. And I think that's what people enjoy.
This raises a good point, because one of the points you brought up in your talk is, you know, many, the Ottoman Empire obviously doesn't exist anymore. The world has changed. There are now all kinds of different countries that cover this kind of territory. But in many cases also with completely different names for the places. And you know, as we said, the script has totally changed from an Arabic-based mm-hmm. script to more of a Latin script. So, like, talk a little bit about that challenge. How do you grapple with all this? I mean,
yeah, I think there's two challenges you just hit on. The first one, and this is a really tricky one, is, you know, let's say that the concept is, hey, I want to be able to tell you how long it would take to travel between any two points in the Ottoman Empire. Well, not only did the technology change from year to year, but those borders were literally changing from year to year, right? It was, you know, generally getting smaller and smaller over time. So the data set is also, in a sense, having to shrink down over time because those borders were contracting. And I'm not adverse to, you know, say, putting in data that tells you how to travel outside, but often it's not included in the maps that I'm looking at because those are focused on a particular, focused on the Ottoman Empire. So how to handle the shifting borders is a really tricky one, which, you know, I don't necessarily even have a great answer for, other than saying, like, I kind of took a certain year and said, like, these are the borders I'm kind of going to work within. The second one about language or the changing names, I guess I kind of took a simplistic approach, which was, I'm just going to use the name that was used at that time. So you're 100% correct. You know, with the emergence of nation states, like, every single country that exists today has probably gone back and revised those names to get rid of, you know, the foreign names, so that everything's, you know, in Greece, you have Greek names, in Turkey, you have Turkish names, in, you know, Arab countries, you typically have, you know, an Arabic name. But obviously that wasn't the case, you know, 150 years ago, where there was a lot more, you know, a lot of places had a Turkish name, but not always. They often had...
A lot of places had multiple names. I mean, the names in many different languages, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly it. And you know, I would say, so out of scope would be try to document all the changes in names over time. But in scope, and something that I actually do find really interesting, is to document all the different names that were used by all the different people who did live in those locations at the same time, right? So, you know, a lot of cities would have, as you said, you know, 2, 3, 4 different, you know, local ethnic groups, and they all had their own names for that city. So as much as possible, if I could dump that in my database as well, then I can present that to the person and say, you know, if you want to search in Armenian or Greek or Arabic, like, you're able to do that and find those places as well.
Wow. And this is an interesting point, because we, you know, typically at GeoMob, we're always discussing this issue of the fact that a map is a two-dimensional representation of three-dimensional space. So we have this, already have this huge challenge of which projection and, you know, what kind of distortion we're going to have. And then now we're throwing in the fourth dimension, of course, of time. And it just you know, it's an order of magnitude more complexity of how to grapple with that. I don't know. I've seen some, you know, there are various approaches. I don't know if you've played, have you played at all with the Open Historical Map?
I have. And I think, like, that's really great for documenting border changes. And I think they do historical events as well. So quite interesting that that they've gone through the effort to put that together.
Yeah. Similarly, are you aware there is, I mean, I saw this years ago, so I don't know what the current status is, but there is someone who made a routing engine for the Roman Empire. Are you familiar with that project?
I think I might have seen that at one point. I do remember seeing that a long time ago.
I don't know. Maybe there's space for collaboration there, or What an interesting hobby, Vin. This is so cool. And I do have to say, it's a bit of a shame for all of our listeners out there that obviously the medium of a podcast is audio. So it's interesting to hear you talk about it. But the joy of your talk was really brought forward by the visual maps that you presented, the actual maps that you had on your slides, which in some cases were very, very beautiful and very interesting. So I do recommend everyone goes to your site and checks it out, because where have you found all these maps? Are these from your, what's the source?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the blog earlier, Mid-Afternoon Map, which again, I would encourage people to look at that as well, because I think it's a great read just to look through the things that he's collected there. The first map I got came from him, but the remarkable thing is just how much of it's online now. When I first got a copy of one of these network maps, I mean, the quality was terrible. It was, it's hard to read anything. But in recent years, so many libraries and archives have been putting their stuff up online for free that you can get it in just remarkable quality. And so there's probably, half a dozen or more libraries which are just amazing resources for old maps.
That's fantastic. So what they're digitizing their collections is that the...
Yeah, absolutely.
That must be such painstaking work.
Yeah, but I mean, we're so lucky that that they're putting it up online for anybody to look at, completely, free and open to download. But yeah, there's some amazing things out there.
So what's next for the project, man? Where does this go? Are you, there's always more data to collect, or are you shifting to another empire, or you're all Ottoman all the time, or what?
We talk about the complexity of languages. I mean, this is an area where I feel like I can operate. I don't know if I could, or would go outside of it. I work on it in sort of like, in fits and starts, and sometimes I'll come to it and really be motivated to, tackle a new city or do something. I have a small checklist on the website of, areas where I know that I don't have, data on, or I don't have information on, or a particular, railway line, which is not fully complete yet. So there's absolutely gaps in it right now. For example, I haven't finished the rail line, which was built just towards the end of the Ottoman Empire, which goes from Damascus down to down south into Saudi Arabia. Like, I just haven't put it into the map yet. So there's those kind of things which...
This is like the one Lawrence of Arabia cut off? Is this
exactly, the Hejaz Railway. Yeah, that's okay. The one.
All right.
So yeah, there's always more work to do. There's more sources which will emerge, more things to put into the database to make it complete.
Absolutely fascinating, man. This was so cool. I mean, this is the joy of GeoMob. I mean, of course, it's amazing that we see like cutting edge technologies and startups doing cool things or whatever. But it is. Absolutely a joy for me when I see someone who just has a passion for a very interesting geospatial topic, as you obviously do, I checked out your website. I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. How many man hours do you estimate you've spent on this?
I have no idea. I mean, like I said, it's something that I, comes in, whenever I have some time, I might sit down and do a little bit of work on it. But, the original sort of push to get things into a database was done such a long time ago. I don't even remember how long it took, but, like you said, you just sit down with the map and the laptop and, put some points on the map and, draw some lines between them. And that's sort of the way it goes.
Well done. Thanks very much for coming here on the show to share your story with us. If someone is interested, of course, we're going to have all the links in the show notes. What is the best way that they can get in touch with you if they want to learn more or send you some corrections or quibble about how your writing engine is working, or, what's the path?
Yeah, I would say just go over to the website and my contact details are there. And absolutely, if somebody finds a mistake, I'd love to know about it, because it means that I'm going to learn something new that I didn't know previously.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up there, Ben. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Ed, for having me talk and then having me on the podcast.
Thanks for joining us today on the GeoMob podcast. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. You can get the show notes over on the website, which is at thegeomob.com. And while you're there, you can sign up for our monthly newsletter and find links to our accounts on Mastodon and LinkedIn, so that you can stay up to date on all our upcoming events. We hope to see you at an event soon.